things that are first things that we can pursue directly without problem, you know, assuming that our senses are working properly. Examples are shapes, sounds, colors, touch, or thoughts. In this story. Now, this are that are hidden from us. And the Tibetan word is kokyur. So say kokyur.
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 So the classical example of a kokyur, a hidden phenomenon, is emptiness. Emptiness is a hidden object. We cannot perceive emptiness through our senses, but we can have a pramana of it and using so, can you see that you have perceived emptiness? At this here, probably not. Oh, you can probably can. If you should have a pretty good, and you say that you perceived it directly. No, of course, unless you have perceived it directly. So, huge difference between perceiving emptiness intellectually and perceiving emptiness directly. Or you have a direct perception of emptiness. You get the intellectual understanding through reasoning it out. Now, the entry to the path of preparation is marked by a deep intellectual understanding of emptiness. It's sort of a sudden, rather miraculous happening. It's kind of like, aha, it all of a sudden just dawns on you what it is. And that understanding is conceptual. It is intellectual, but it is not direct. So when you perceive something through reasoning by figuring it out, that thing is a kokyur. It's a hidden phenomenon. It's hidden to our senses. We can't see, taste, touch, smell, or feel it. Another example of a hidden object is subtle impermanence. There are two levels of impermanence. One is gross impermanence. For example, when your pen runs out of ink and stops working, or your car runs out of gas, or your car is destroyed in a car crash. Gross impermanence is a ngongyur. It's a normal, evident phenomenon. Gross impermanence we can perceive with our senses. But when you meditate for a long time and finally understand that things only last for an instant, that is understanding is an understanding of subtle impermanence. And it is a kokyur. It's a hidden phenomenon, which now is no longer hidden for you because you've perceived it through logic and reasoning. Now, if this is one of your first Buddhist classes, subtle impermanence is this thing that anything lasts only for a fraction of a second. There are things come into existence, abide, and go out of existence 64 or 65 times in the duration of a finger snap. A finger snap is used in Buddhism as the shortest duration of a thing that we can see. And in the duration of a finger snap, there are 64 occasions of a thing going in and out of existence. A thing comes into existence, it abides, as it is. It's not strong enough to last for this, you know, millionth or thousandth of a second. It just can't do it. And as it is going out of existence, it creates the cause for its next moment. So as it goes out of existence, it creates the cause, and when it is finished being what it was, it's gone out of existence, the next moment of that thing comes into existence. But this, and this is subtle impermanence, and it pervades everything. And we cannot see that, but we can figure it out and understand it. So, as I've said several times today, you cannot perceive hidden phenomena with your senses, except with your mental sense. So we have five sense consciousnesses, one for each of our five physical senses. But there is a sixth sense, which is the mental sense, which is a moment of thought, really. And that's called a consciousness, too. So it is with this mental consciousness that we are able to perceive hidden phenomena. Why? Because it's an intellectual activity, and our mental sense is that activity. Now, there are things disintegrating in front of your eyes moment by moment, but our eyes cannot register that. You know, it's sort of like when you go to see a movie, you know, or you're watching television for that matter. There are distinct still photographs that appear normally 24 times a second, or in the case of television, maybe 60. They change. We don't perceive them changing. We don't perceive the individual still photographs. We perceive a continuity. There's a flow of motion. You know, it's similar to the fact that we cannot perceive ultraviolet light waves. Our eyes do not respond to that. So things that are, when things reflect ultraviolet light rays, we cannot see them. There's camera film that can, but we can't. There are sounds above and below certain frequencies that we cannot perceive either. Now, those phenomena do exist. Why? Well, dogs can hear high sounds. Cats can hear high sounds. But we can't, you know. They're not perceivable by human senses. So, and those fall into this kokyure, these hidden phenomena. So that's the second level of reality when we're talking about these three levels. The third one is called deeply hidden phenomena. So say Shinto Kokyure.
Shinto Kokyure.
Shinto Kokyure.
Shinto Kokyure.
Shinto Kokyure.
Shinto Kokyure.
Deeply hidden phenomena. So what object is more hidden than emptiness? Well, it's the subtle workings of karma. That's the classical example. Things that are deeply hidden are usually the targets of children's questions. You know, suppose a good friend of your family is killed in an automobile accident, and your child asks you why your friend died and the driver didn't. And answer like something like, well, because he was hurt more. But why was he hurt more? Oh, because he was in the passenger seat. But why was he in the passenger seat? And so on. So it gets to a point, you know, where we have no more answers to the child's questions. The child's questions are getting at a deeply hidden phenomenon. Why? You know, why did that person die? What were the causes, you know? And a Buddha can answer these questions, but we cannot. High-level bodhisattvas really can't do it. It's only available to omniscient minds. And we cannot even reason these things out. Why? Because we don't know the causes. You know, when we study karma, we get a list of things that we do that lead to certain kinds of results, but they're very specific. You know, any experience we have including dying, is due to a very specific set of causes. Things that we have done that lead to an experience that we have. Very specific things, not general ones. Something that happened at 2:05 Wednesday, January something, something like that. And we don't know those. Only Buddhists can know those. So the very subtle workings of karma are deeply hidden phenomena. So how do we perceive deeply hidden phenomena? Well, we start off by hearing explanations given to us by Buddhas. You know, we in a pramana of the subtle workings of karma, even though we can't understand the specific of causes for specific events. But there have been certain conditions present for us to buy into an explanation, you know, about a deeply hidden phenomenon from a Buddha. And we're going to talk about that later. So, and then there's two other kinds of reality can be divided in another way, two levels of reality. And these have been talked about in classes 1 through 3. And those are conventional and ultimate truths. Now, these levels are different. Why? These levels are from the Sautrantika school. The two truths, the three levels we just discussed are from the Sautrantika school. The two levels, the two truths, conventional and ultimate truths, are from the two higher schools, the mind-only school and the middle-way school. Now, we are very much interested in hidden phenomena. You know, we work with them all the time. We try to figure out why something at work isn't going right, you know, or why your spouse is mad at you. And we do this all day long. And usually, we are right about our conclusions. You know, we don't really know why the work isn't going right or the emotional state of our spouse, but we can reason it out if we think about it, you know. If we don't do the reasoning well, then we get into trouble. More importantly, for us, there are a lot of things in the universe that are hidden from us. We can use reasoning to make things visible to us. For example, are there spirits around us? You know, we can't see spirits, but maybe we can figure out that there have to be spirits around us. Or maybe we figure out that there can't be spirits around us. You know, even though that contradicts scripture. Maybe there are past and future lives, even though we cannot perceive them. And maybe there aren't. You know, this that topic of debate between the Buddhists and the hedonists in the first 3 or 4 centuries of this era. You know, we can ask, is there such a state as nirvana, where we will never suffer again? You know, is there the mental state of omniscience, where we know everything in the universe, past, present, and future, all at once? These are things that we cannot perceive, but maybe we can figure them out. After all, you know, if there are no past or future lives, Lord Buddha's teachings are useless to us, and our practice a waste of time. You know, these classes are a waste of time if there are no past or future lives. Are these levels of reality mutually exclusive, or do they overlap? And we're talking about the three levels, you know, obvious, hidden, deeply hidden. Well, it depends on our level of realizations. The three levels are not object-dependent. In other words, there is not anything out there that itself is an obvious phenomenon. There isn't anything out there that in and of itself is a hidden phenomenon. So whether something which category, which level something falls in isn't dependent on the object. You know, it's dependent on our mind. It's dependent on us. Are there such things as subtle impermanence? Yes. Are they hidden? Yes. If you haven't perceived them through reasoning. If you've perceived them through reasoning, then they are not hidden for you. All three levels of this reality are known to Buddhas. Can a blind man have a normal perception of yellow? No. Yellow is hidden to a blind person. Probably deeply hidden. Because even through reasoning, a blind man cannot have a perception of yellow. You know, how do you define blue? How do you define a sweet taste? You really can't do it. You have to experience it. Now, there are two kinds of valid perception, two kinds of pramana. Well, there's actually lots, but one way you divide them is into two levels. The first one is direct, and the second one is deductive. Now, a direct perception is what you need to connect with the reality level number one, or the ngongyur, the evident things, you know, the obvious things to us. Now, direct perceivers are our five sense consciousnesses and our perception of our own thought. So when you are perceiving an object with your eyes, your eye consciousness is a direct perceiver. It's not a conceptual one. Your eye doesn't know about blue. It doesn't know about round. Eye, by the way, perceives shapes and colors. It doesn't know about cylinder and so on. A direct perceiver is sort of like a mirror. It simply reflects what it's seen. If you hold up a mirror and you have a blue sheet of paper, put the blue sheet of paper in front of the mirror, what the mirror is blue. It takes on that. Is the mirror itself blue? No, it isn't. But when that blue sheet of paper is in front of it, the mirror is blue. And that's sort of what a direct perceiver is like. It doesn't have to think about what something is. It simply perceives it directly. So our five sense consciousnesses are direct perceivers. And our perception of our own thoughts is also a direct perceiver. We don't have those very often. And they're a topic we're going to discuss probably when we get to course 13. When we say perception of our own thoughts, this is an awareness of our own thoughts. You know, it's not a judgmental reasoning about our thoughts. So you need direct perception to perceive obvious objects. And those perceivers are basically our five sense consciousnesses. All right. When we say direct perception, we're not referring to the direct perception of emptiness. All sense perceivers are direct perceivers. They know their objects directly without a mental image getting in the way. And we're going to talk a little bit more about mental image later. Our eyes directly perceive shapes and colors, for example. The ear directly perceives sounds, and so on. Direct perception, in this sense, means perception done without the process of deductive reasoning. We can perceive our own thoughts directly, even though the thoughts themselves may not be direct perceptions. And that one you get to work on a little bit. Also, a person in the first moment of the path of seeing, which is where we have our first direct perception of emptiness, is having a ngongyur, in other words, an evident perception of emptiness. Emptiness is evident to that person, having that direct perception of emptiness. It is not, at that time, a hidden object to them. For the second and third levels of reality, we need deductive perceptions, you know. And in addition to that, these must be deductive, correct perceptions using true reasoning. We do this level of perception all day long. You know, for example, if a pen falls from somebody's hand and then we hear a thunk on the floor, we deduce that the pen has hit the floor even though we haven't seen it hit the floor. You know, so we use this kind of perception all day long. We reasoned it out that the pen hit the floor. Did we see the pen hit the floor? No. Did the pen hit the floor? We say, of course it hit the floor. No, there's no other possibility. But that is a deductive process. We did not see it happen. We did not have a direct experience of that. So all we have to do now is learn more rules of reasoning so we can apply it to hidden objects like emptiness, you know, or like the state of other people's minds. Most problems we experience in various relationships have to do with faulty reasonings about this, you know, with thinking that somebody has such and such thoughts when in fact they have different thoughts. So we have to learn how to see hidden things clearly, accurately. So, what about Master Dignaga's text, you know, the Compendium of Valid Perception? He lays out this purpose in the opening lines of his text. And these lines say, I bow down or I prostrate to the person or to those who have become correct. Now, the Tibetan for bow down or prostrate is chaksel. And chak means hand. Self means to look, you know, or to seek. So when you bow down to your lama or another holy being, you are looking for their hand for help. And that's really what chaksel means in Tibetan. The Sanskrit word for bow down is namas. In India today, you greet somebody with namaste. Namas, right? I bow down to you. The Buddhist texts start with the same kind of homage. My Treya bows down to the three knowledges. Master Chandrakirti bows down to those with a bodhicitta mind. He bows down to bodhisattvas. He bows down to people with great compassion. Here Master Dignaga is bowing down to the teacher, Lord Buddha. So these lines read in the first part of his text, I bow down to the person who has these five qualities. Those are the protector, those gone to bliss, the teacher, those who wish to benefit sentient beings, and those who have turned into persons with valid perception. So let's look at these five parts. Turned into valid perception, a person who has turned into valid perception or become valid. Master Dignaga is bowing down to a person who has valid perception. So tema, which is valid perception, here refers to someone who has had valid perception. A Buddha has valid perception. Now, I've said that we have valid perception 90% of the time. Even 99.9% of the time, all day long. But those valid perceptions are typically valid sense perceptions. A Buddha has valid perceptions of everything that exists in the universe, all the time. The next part, you know, is one who wishes to benefit all living beings. And this is another quality of a Buddha. Why is that important to us? A Buddha, an enlightened person, is the only one who can actually help us. Why? Because they are the ones who have reached omniscience. They have done it. Therefore, they can show us how. And if they want to show us how, then we're in pretty good shape because they have the desire. They're not going to keep it from us. And it's interesting. The only way that you can become enlightened is that you consider everybody else more important than yourself. You have this great compassion that you want to remove the suffering from everybody else without exception, and that you will do anything in your power to make that happen. That's how you become a Buddha. It is a condition. If you don't have that, you cannot become a Buddha. So this, you know, second thing, one who wishes to benefit all living beings is an important quality of the Buddha, the five qualities that we're talking about here. Third quality is the teacher. And this is the one who shows us the way to nirvana and enlightenment. The only thing that a Buddha can do for us is to teach us. Buddhas are not omnipotent. In other words, they can't make things happen, but they can teach us. And that's what they do. If Buddhas were omnipotent, meaning if they could take away our suffering, they would have done that zillions of years ago, because they're compassionate beings. But the fact that we are still suffering is indication, and here we use reasoning, you know, that they are not omnipotent. But they can teach us, and we have this huge body of teachings. Fourth quality, one who has gone to bliss. The Sanskrit word for this is sugata. One who has gone to bliss is somebody who has left the suffering world behind and dwells only in a blissful way. And the fifth quality is protective. How do Buddhas protect us? By teaching us. And also, if we understand these qualities and we can take refuge in those, one of the protections is our faith in them, that they can help us. And if we have that faith, then we don't have fear. And that's very important. When you really begin to practice Buddhism, after you've been doing it for a year or two, things begin to happen that you really don't want to have happen to you. It can be scary. And so we have to become fearless. I don't care what's going to happen to me, if it's going to hurt. I'm going to do this. Why? Because I want out of suffering, and this is the way to do it. So Master Dignaga is bowing down to these five qualities in his first two lines in his text. I bow down to the protector. I bow down to those gone to bliss. I bow down to the teacher. I bow down to those who wish to benefit all beings. And I bow down to those who have turned into persons with valid perception. So in this course, we're going to concentrate on this first quality, someone who's turned into a valid perceiver. To develop this kind of valid perception, we develop our deductive reasoning capabilities. And this lets us understand things which are not obvious or evident to us, things that we must understand in order to make progress. So that's it. Are there any questions? We can have them now. You all must be kind of numb. Think very clearly.
So if there are no, questions, Linda, do you have a question? We can't hear you properly.
Oh, no, I have no question.
Okay, because I see that there is. So I would like to thank Honorable Phil for this very great teaching and would like to ask if you can say a few words about how to do the homeworks and meditations, because a few of us is doing the first ACI course.
Okay. So you have homework and you have meditation assignment, and you have meditation assignment. Usually classes expand on the course, but not. There will be teachings that not readings.
Can you please mute your microphone?
I'm hearing myself talk, which I love to do, but it's not good. There might also be questions in the on the homework that are only in the readings that I don't talk about. So you need to do both. Now, when you do these homework questions, look at your notes if you've taken them. Look at the reading and try to come in with the best answer that you can do. With regard to the memorization assignments, for example, for homework for class one, you were to memorize the answers to questions 2, 3, and 6. Question 2 has to do, what's the Buddhist definition for existence? And you would write down, the definition of existence is that which is perceived by an unaffected perception or a correct state of mind or a valid perception, something like that. Question 3 has to do with the texts we're studying, and you should be able to write them and who wrote them, and if you know the dates of those authors. And question 6 why did Buddha himself say that is the purpose of Buddhist logic? And that was the one I or somebody like myself somebody like me can judge a person, but no normal person should judge another, for he or she will fall where into the hell realms. So you should memorize that too. And then the meditation assignment find a time you're going to meditate and find a time that you can do it at the same time each day. Don't do it in the morning and then in the afternoon the next day and then in the morning again or then whenever you try to find a time that is your time for meditation. The meditation is to be whether the purpose stated in question number 6, meaning that only me or somebody like myself can judge a person, but no normal person can. Whether that statement is airtight, meaning is it absolutely true or could there be any exceptions to it? So meditate on that. And then write down the dates and the times that you meditated. Each day, and do that for 15 minutes a day. Now, since we did 2 classes, you're going to do like 4 days on one and 3 days on the other, or vice versa, something like that. Does that help?
Yes. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. So I want all of you for sitting. If you're just beginning, it's going to be at times like you feel like you're in kindergarten and you know all the stuff, or it's for babies, and other times when you won't have a clue about what I'm saying. And this is just kind of the way it's going to be. As Geshe Michael says, get used to it. And there'll be ups and downs, and that's okay too. But you know, but these are the start for changing your world. The only way to get rid of suffering for yourself and others is to learn this material, so it is no longer hidden for you. No, it becomes manifest. Anything else? Okay. Have a very pleasant rest of your evening.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And please teach us again next week.
Yeah. Well, next Thursday.
Thank you.
Okay.
I will put out the audio files tomorrow evening so everybody can hear the teaching again if you want. And being in German for class 2 will also be available tomorrow evening. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.